Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Liu. I'm joined on this week's episode by Asad, who, listen, there's not a lot going on in the offseason, so we might be jumping the gun, but let's just look ahead to all the players and sort of go through each guy and what we expect of them for the upcoming season. So I think you and I both agree the most important player next season will be not Pascal Siakam, actually, but Kyle Lowry. First off, do you agree that Kyle Lowry is more important than Pascal in terms of just what happens next season?
In him being on the team, yes.
Well, that's part of it.
Yeah, no, the fact of the matter is that, like, no matter how much Pascal improves next year, like, even if he stays as good as he was this past year, you can live in the regular season without having, like, a go-to Kawhi Leonard-style star if you have a point guard like Kyle Lowry to run any five-man unit. I think the Raptors' setup have a lot of guys who are like plus role players to starter-level guys who can, from time to time, create their own offense, but are mainly just, you know, either elite finishers or, you know, elite secondary or good at secondary playmaking. So really, as long as you have that initiator in Kyle Lowry who can hit the spots and give you that 2 second or half step advantage on any play, you can really make everything go. And that goes for Serge Ibaka, that goes for Pascal Siakam, that goes for OG Anunoby, that goes for Norm Powell, even Fred VanVleet. Kyle takes a lot of pressure off of everybody and creates a lot of advantages that in the regular season especially leads to a lot of success. So yes, 100%, he is the biggest and most important person on the team next year in terms of what success will look like in the season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, what did he average last year? 8.9 or 8.7 assists per game last season, playing 34 minutes a game. That's a career high for him in terms of assists. Actually, nowhere close, really. He's only gotten above 7 like one time. So 8.7 was a very significant number. It was honestly even higher than that for most of the season until he sort of had his minutes cut down a little bit too. But I think, honestly, you just have to make a decision very early on. Like, are we going to keep Kyle, you know, in terms of the long-term strategy, too? Because if you feel like Kyle Lowry is somebody who you want to keep around even after this season, just as like a, you know, an ancillary piece, maybe he starts next season, maybe he doesn't. But, you know, you kind of have to make that decision earlier on. And you can give yourself an out and say, look, if everything goes to shit, then you can still trade Kyle to a winning situation. But for the most part, I mean, you kind of need to make that decision early on because, yeah, I completely agree with you. Like, the offense is just not going to run without a playmaker. And that's where, like, we'll talk about Fred in a second. But that's where I feel like if you just look at the rest of the guys, like, you know, Fred is not necessarily a great playmaker. And if you look at the shooting guard position, they're not just having a lot of plays made out of that spot. So it really comes down between Kyle and Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol for who can just make everyone else get in the right position even. To even be in a good position to score. So Kyle's going to be very important. And the question with Kyle really is just like, which Kyle are we going to get consistently? Because last year he was sort of banged up, went through like 4 months of the season shooting like less than 30% from three. And if that's the Kyle that shows up, then that's a bit more of a concern. But if he can stay healthy and, you know, if he can hit a decent share of his threes, then, you know, I think we're looking at a very good Raptor team. But if he doesn't do that, then some issues arise.
Yeah, and I think part of it was injuries last year, but you could tell last year, especially in the part of the season when he was healthy, the first part of the season when he was healthy, where the Raptors were basically booming in games they had Kawhi, in games they didn't have Kawhi, they were booming. But you could tell in the games that where Kawhi played, it was a completely different type of Kyle Lowry where there was zero aggression because he didn't really know where to play and where his like where his slants and his angles are going to be and when he'd be able to actually kind of push for the ball versus whenever Kawhi was out of the game. And that was most of the season, even when his shot wasn't falling. Anytime Kawhi was out of the game, it was still like, oh, this is a Kyle Lowry-led game. Like even the worst example, I think the best example of it, and it's not a great example because it was such a crappy opponent, but Kyle had a horrid shooting night and the team actually didn't have a good shooting night. And I think they were short Kawhi and they're short one more key guy, I don't remember. But Kyle, even though he shot like crap, led the team, had created fast break, initiated fast break, consistently got Pascal looks. And that was the Phoenix game where Pascal ends up hitting the game winner. Where Kyle sets up the entire game for you. He might not be shooting that well, but he sets up the entire game, keeps everybody kind of going. You're in at the end of the game. And then you look to somebody on the team, whether that's going to be a Pascal, whether that's going to be, oh, God, whether that's going to be a Norm.
Oh, man.
To create something bounce or create something to score. But that's probably, I think, the minimum level that you can see with Kyle Lowry, where at least against 15 to 20 of the 30 teams in the league, he can, you know, stamp a game without shooting it well. But if you're going to rely on him for 70 games a season, or at least 65, I think you can count on Kyle for 65 games every season, because that's the incentive number.
I was going to say, what's the bonus?
Yeah, that's the bonus number.
Just raise that bonus to like 75, please.
Yeah, so as long as he's hit 65 games and you get like 45 of them healthy, that's like 30 to 35 wins right there, right? Like if you get 45 healthy Kyle Lowry games in a season, that's 30 to 35 wins right there. And then, you know, you eke out the rest of it and you're looking at somewhere between 45 to 55 wins depending on what the team structure ends up being, right?
Yeah, I agree. And I know it sounds kind of high to people, but like, again, we've seen Kyle do this with the Raptors with like way less talent. And I know Kyle was younger at the time.
I know people say that number's high, but they're like, I actually went through all the teams in the league. Like, I literally pulled out last year's schedule and I just counted the number of games against each team. And I looked at them this year and I'm like, there are so many crap teams. Like, there are a solid 12 to 13 teams the Raptors are just going to sweep the season series because they're that bad. And a lot of them are in the East.
Yeah, and a lot of them are teams that don't know how to play with each other, too. That's the issue.
Yeah, so that's 12 to 13 teams that you're probably going to have a season sweep on. That's like 35 wins.
Yeah, no, that's
like,
a good
point.
Like,
that's a lot of freaking games.
That's a good point.
So, yeah, so that's why, like, I think Kyle Lowry is the most important thing. Because at the end of the day, he's the one that raises your floor to a point where it's like all the pieces make sense. Because without Kyle Lowry, then all the pieces lack the actual minimum talent level to register, you know, like a five-man offense that works.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like the Raptors could actually use not another point guard, but just another playmaker.
They could definitely use another playmaker. I don't doubt that. I'm just saying that without Kyle Lowry, the fall off is much deeper than with him.
Yeah. Yep, for the, seventh year in a row now, Kyle Lowry would be the most impactful Raptor. I guess Kawhi last year kind of skirted that, but Kyle really is the wild factor every single year. Pascal. So what are we expecting from Pascal? Because if I look at it like this, right, if Pascal could have a season similar to what Blake Griffin did last year, which is asking for a lot. Blake Griffin was, I'm not sure if he made All-NBA, but he was like on that level. And he was really good.
I thought he made third team All-NBA.
Okay, so like an All-NBA type of level of production. Maybe Pascal makes it, maybe it doesn't. But if you can sort of get that out of Pascal, then you know you look at the Pistons. They got 41 wins last year, which is not great. Obviously, that's 500. But that's Blake Griffin with like trash talent around him. Like just, you know, no offense, Stanley Johnson. Now that you're on the Raptors, you're clearly a premium talent. But like, I mean, you know, the Pistons just were not very functional around him. And you give Pascal some actual functioning supporting players, a really good player in Kyle, pretty good player in Mark. You know, Serge is pretty solid. And then you can maybe see that, you know, that baseline of 41 and you add on a couple more and you get to 50. I mean, first off, is it realistic to get to, for Pascal to get a season similar to what Blake Griffin did last year, or is that expecting too much out of him considering the fact that he's going to get double teamed like pretty consistently? And to, for the record, Blake Griffin last year, 24 points a game, 7.5 rebounds, 5.4 assists, shot 46% from the field, 36% from deep. You know, it's not necessarily a far cry from what Pascal did in the playoffs.
So here's what I'm going to say about Pascal. So Pascal can average that 100%. I believe he can average that. And the reason I think he can average that, just because he can average that doesn't mean that he can do that against like the elite teams in the league.
Okay.
And I think that's the difference. So here's the thing. Like, you look at the teams in the league and the players that can actually guard Pascal, right? We saw the teams that actually could guard him mm-hmm. in the playoffs, right? So you're looking at Philly.
Yep.
You're looking at Milwaukee. You're looking at Golden State with Draymond, kind of. And maybe Orlando. Slida? He cooked Orlando.
Nah,
too,
he cooked
right?
Orlando. Yeah.
So what other teams are there that can kind of guard him? You know, Thad Young can probably guard him. What team does Thad Young play for now?
He plays for the Bulls now.
He plays for the Bulls.
Yeah,
that
random.
Doesn't matter. Who else can guard Pascal? Like, I went through the list of teams and I'm like, there are like maybe 8 teams in the league that, you know, have like good matchups for Pascal to guard him.
I mean, you could even just go through, like, if you just look at the Eastern Conference, Charlotte, no. Detroit, no. Orlando, no. Brooklyn, I mean, nah.
When KD comes back, sure, but until KD comes back, were they guarding him with DeAndre Jordan?
Yeah, it's a full year, so no. Indiana, no. I mean, I guess Miles Turner could actually do something. I don't think I've ever seen that happen, but I mean, like, the rest of the conference, like, yeah, it's kind of a no. And then you look at the West, yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, I think it's the thing.
The Clippers can guard him. The Lakers can maybe guard him. Anthony Davis can guard him. I don't think the rest of the team can. But, like, again, the Western Conference, you're only going to play those teams twice a season, mm-hmm. and there's maybe only 4 teams in the West that have guys that can match up and guard him. There's, like, 8 teams in the league that have legitimate elite guys to guard him with, where you're like, you know what, Pascal's going to have trouble on this team because he's going to have trouble with his one-on-one matchup, and then that's going to cause him trouble with the help. Against every other team in the league, we know that if he has Kyle Lowry and can initiate a fast break for him, he's going to get 16 points easily out of fast break and semi-transition. And, like, and then he doesn't have, and those
stuff.
Teams just flat out do not have a player that can guard him in a one-on-one situation at all. And if you have Kyle Lowry on the floor and you have enough shooting with Kyle, Fred, Serge, or Mark, and OG, like just enough spacing, you're going to find situations where Pascal is going to, in quick hit looks, is going to just burn his guy because he goes that fast. So that's just based on his last year. What he did last year near the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget, like, he looked so much different near the end of the season than he did at the beginning of the season.
Yep.
Right? So even his average stats last year don't really mean much to me because I think he was on the higher end of those. So that's where I think, like, this season from Pascal, you're going to see him averaging those type of, like, all NBA style numbers. And that might not mean that he is all NBA because he might not be able to do those against the elite, elite teams. Because I think there's still like another year or year and a half for him to make a leap to be able to actually do that and develop the strength to be able to do that and develop the shot to be able to do that consistently. But against like 22, 23 of the 30 teams in the league, he's going to cook them. And I wholeheartedly believe that because his efficiency numbers, when Kawhi's off the floor, Danny Green's off the floor, Kyle Lowry's off the floor, like
they
you can
strong.
Keep taking
consistent.
Every time you take a starter off the floor, he's still shooting over 50%. His true shooting's still high. His 3-point shooting is still above 33% at the minimum. In some cases, over 40. Like there was at no point was there a drop off. And in the games I looked at, he had like I think there were 8 games or no, there was 13 or 14 games last season where he had over 25% usage rate. Which of course like. It's a flawed argument, right? Because like, if a player's doing well, he's going to end up using the ball more as well. But in the games that he had a high usage rate, whether like not the defensive rating means too much, but his defensive rating would hold up per NBA.com. And then also his like offensive efficiency stats were like at his season average or better consistently. So at the minimum, it shows that at a higher usage, he has shown the capability – to maintain efficiency. And I think in the regular season where teams don't have the time to game plan for him correctly, they're going to get caught off guard on switches dealing with his speed. Like, he's going to do really well, I guess, against like at least two-thirds of the league. Yeah. So I definitely expect him to be an all-star because Tobias Harris is able to get all-star consideration, and right. Tobias Harris is nowhere close to the player Pascal Siakam is.
Yeah, we saw them in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Tobias Harris was leading a Clippers squad in the West. Theoretically.
Honestly, yeah, Gallo might have been better than him.
Yeah. Which is why I think, like, Pascal has enough talent to cook a majority of the league. So he's going to put up great stats. He's going to perform well. And which is actually why I'm really high on the Raptors. Because, like, between Pascal and Kyle, their minimum talent level is higher than most of the other teams. And you know that the Raptors as a unit, execution-wise, are going to out-execute, like, the majority of the league, especially the Eastern Conference, and they play a lot of games against them.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I'm looking for Pascal to, well, a couple of things. One, if he takes another leap, I wonder what direction that leap is in terms of, is it in terms of playmaking? Because, and I don't mean playmaking is just like he gets doubled and he finds the open man, because you can only get so many assists doing that, right? Like, I mean, like, playmaking in terms of, like, are we going to see Pascal run pick and roll? And is he going to handle the ball? And is he going to be able to make the right reads and get to the spots on the floor where he can be dangerous, force help, and then, you know, find the open shooter? If he can basically play a point forward role, I think he will have plenty of opportunity to do that this season to sort of just test his limits. And if he can do that, then that will be a huge break in his in terms of his development. And I think that will change sort of how the Raptors should look at building and moving forward, because he might be more of a small forward than he is a power forward, or more of a center at least. I think realistically he is a power forward going forward. I think we know that, but who knows? I mean, it could be like a Giannis type of situation. I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Giannis. I just mean like that kind of function. He can have that kind of effect. So I'm interested to see that. I'm also interested to see like just like skill wise, like what bumps up for him. Like, is he going to be a better shooter? Like, is he going to have like a mid-range pull up, right? Like, I'm not necessarily expecting him to pull up from three. Although I would hope that he can stay consistent from the catch and shoot corners and things like that. But is he going to have like a pull up jumper? Because again, that would also really go a long way in terms of him growing as a playmaker. Because if you can run pick and roll, you can pull up, then, you know, it just changes the way the defense guards you. And
yeah, that's it. That makes you just a more dynamic player, right? You go from being like a guy who a defense only has to look at like two or three things to stop you at. Like, you can be really elite at two or three things, but if a defense can stop you at that, then it's like you can put up great stats, you can be super elite at it, but it limits the, like, your, like, it, like, not being dynamic on offense is what actually ends up hurting you in the playoffs. Whether that hurts you in the regular season too much, not really, but that's actually what hurts people in the playoffs, is the players that aren't dynamic enough that can do multiple things at elite level. So, like, that's one thing that we saw with Giannis in the playoffs, right? He's an elite player, clearly, and is very hard to stop. But if you can, like, at least slow down and stop, like, at some level the things he's very elite at, then that's when the glaring weaknesses come out. The same thing with Russell Westbrook. The things where he's very elite at, if you can slow those down, then the weaknesses accentuate themselves versus players that are, like, even across the board or are elite at multiple things. Like, you're never going to stop a Kevin Durant. There's literally no way to do it.
Yeah.
Right? And, of course, these are extreme examples that we're using. But with Pascal, that's the thing. Once you develop an off the dribble game where you can have a jumper, it just changes the way what you can do in an offense. Because then you can be off ball or on ball, and now the defense has to look at guarding you in multiple ways, right? Mm-hmm. They have to have help coverages for when you're off ball or you're posting up, and they also have to know where the helps are when you're on ball, and whether if he runs a pick and roll with this guy as a switch, are we trapping? Are we hedging? You have, like, it just creates more coverages that people have to remember for a certain player, right? And that's what brings it. So that's, I think, the next role in him. And I've always thought the prototype for him was always Lamar Odom, right? Where you're this, like, power forward who's faster than most power forwards, has a better handle than most power forwards. And the one thing that Lamar Odom did really well and why he won a Sixth Man of the Year was that he was a good enough ball handler and playmaker that he could run a second unit. So he could be like an elite role player on the starting unit, and then he could run the second unit to an above average efficiency. And the big things in Lamar's game was he could handle the ball. He could do basic. He could do reads out of a pick and roll, was a good passer, and he could hit a pull-up jumper when he needed to. So he could hit a pull-up elbow jumper, and he could get you a bucket if even in a short clock situation, right? And that's always our thought. So that's kind of the prototype that I think Pascal is probably going to build to, where you're a dynamic four. You don't have to be a stretch four per se, but just a dynamic four.
Yeah. And this is partially why I brought up Blake Griffin earlier in this kind of comparison with Pascal, is that like Blake kind of had the same trajectory. Obviously, Blake's a very different type of player. He was an elite finisher, role guy. Obviously, the athleticism was on another level, even as compared to Pascal. But like, you know, as his game aged and he sort of matured, I mean, he moved away from the basket and he developed his perimeter skills and he became a better playmaker. And there's just a lot of things that Blake Griffin's able to do, to the point where now he's a very well-rounded scorer. And I mean, we've seen what Blake Griffin's done to the Raptors a couple of times. So I'm hoping to see a little bit of that from Pascal in terms of the sense of just, you know, it's the same thing as you, man, the playmaking. It is just really hard to run a good offense through a, you know, primarily post-up sort of player nowadays. But, like, I think the Raptors might have just enough pieces around them to sort of make it work, because you look at a guy like Marc Gasol, who we should probably talk about next. You know, he enables a lot of that stuff. I think a lot of the reason why post-up play doesn't really work is that, like, you know, you're running, I don't know, you're running a two-point shot, basically. It's going to be contested most times, and, like, chances are pretty good that someone will help and come from the blind side and strip the ball or contest a shot or whatever. And what you need in that situation is, you know, a very smart big man who can, A, space the floor, so keep the paint clear, and also someone who can sort of get Pascal into good positions where, you know, entering the ball into the post is sometimes a very difficult thing to do. And I think with Mark, like, it's almost the same thing with Kyle, in the sense that you don't necessarily need him to score like 20 points a game or anything close to that, but you need Marc Gasol to come in and just establish structure. I think, you know, there is a case to be made that you can like run an offense out of Mark. Like, Mark can be the hub of an offense, but I think we've also seen that that's not necessarily the super efficient thing based on what happened at the end of Memphis. But, you know, there are things that Marc Gasol can do in terms of his playmaking, in terms of just his effect on the game, where I think, especially with a younger team, you know, you're going to need a lot from Gasol in terms of just, like, he's going to have to be an adult on the floor. He's going to have to help direct players into better spots. He's going to need to be a better passer, or not a better passer, but just he needs to be a great passer and enable guys like OG and Norm to play off the ball and cut. And, you know, if he can do all that, and if he's not traded, you know, that would be a huge thing for the Raptors. What are you kind of expecting out of Marc Gasol?
Yeah, so what you just said, like, where what we saw in Memphis out of him, like, if you try to use him as an offensive hub, the biggest thing is when you try to be an offensive hub as a big man, is when you have a high level of talent around you, you can be the offensive hub easily without having to be as much of an offensive threat. Because because you're surrounded by higher level of talent, higher level finishers, they don't need as much room to, you know, use an advantage, right? So, like, Marc Gasol's decision making is going to get you half a step or an extra step advantage, right? But now when you see a talent, like, you lose Kawhi and you lose Danny Green, who are elite decision makers, elite finishers of plays, when you lose those two guys, now you have younger guys who are a little slower at making decisions, not as elite at finishing, even though they're effective, they're not elite. Now to create the same level of advantage as Marc Gasol, you have to establish yourself as an offensive threat. So you have to at least be able to, when you're running the elbow offense, make the decision like, okay, crap, I have to use this possession right here and just get a bucket. And if you can do that once or twice, then it creates more room for everybody else to play, right? Which is more important when you have a lower level of talent. I personally think with Marc Gasol, like, the biggest thing that he can provide is just, like, helping ease the second unit a little bit when he's playing in mixed lineups. Because, like, again, like, when you talk about Norm and you talk about OG, if you give these guys a whole season to kind of play with Marc Gasol and cut, because they're really good cutters when they do cut, and they're dynamic finishers, right? Like, those are level of athletes that Mark didn't have in Memphis. So you're hoping that, like, that should be a good mix on paper. So I think for him, that's the biggest thing. Like, let's see if he declines, what he declines at, and where it's at, but I do feel confident that the one thing with Kawhi out, it'll give Mark a bit more reason to be more aggressive a little bit on offense, take more shots.
Yeah.
Like on our, like he was averaging like 4 to 7 shots per game, depending on how the game went.
Yeah, there was like, it was just crazy how much he was passing up shots. Like it was like beyond the kind of like, call level.
And the one thing Nick Nurse said was like, yo, I want to see you taking 4 to 5 threes a game.
Yeah.
Right. And he's still only like maxed out like 3 at times, which is like, okay, now we don't have Kawhi, so you don't have to keep deferring.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually one of the best 3-point shooters we have now, so just take the shot.
Yeah.
And it'll be fun to see. Let's see if he takes the shot. I don't know if he does. Maybe he does, though. And I think it would be interesting to see how he reacts in that role. I do think that having a full season with him instead of having the half season, since now if he does start the season, which I think they're going to start the season with everybody. They're not really going to be able to trade anyone until December 15th anyways.
Yeah, the trade market right now is trash. So
if you're going to start the season, you know that you have a really good chance of starting at home in the playoffs. Like, this is not a bad team. And you get a whole training camp with Marc Gasol, I feel he'll feel more ownership on the team.
Yeah.
And if he does show up and is taking that ownership and is engaged, then you're going to see something positive. The biggest problem in Memphis was anytime they'd go on a slight losing streak or they'd kind of fall out the playoff picture,
he'd pout and like try to kill the coach.
Yeah.
No, but for real, that's what happened.
Yeah. So that's the thing. The one thing I do think is, I just thought of right now, is going to really hurt. Like with Pascal always leaking out in transition, the one thing where the Raptors really needed to use Kawhi was as a defensive rebounder. And now when you have Pascal leaking out, and I think this will go when we talk about OG, since he's likely going to be the 3-man,
right,
is you're probably going to need defensive rebounding coming from your 3 and your 5. Because I think that's what we did last year. We had our 3 and our 5 do the defensive rebounding because Pascal's leaking out,
right,
and our 2-man's leaking out, right? And then Kawhi
was great for that. As a rebounding freak, was incredible.
Because, and the one thing that Kawhi did, he ran the most. Like him, Pascal, and Danny Green were really good at covering ground. They were consistently running the entire game. Like Kawhi Leonard, he'll get a defensive rebound and still get down the floor before the defense because he just runs that hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely a skill that, like when we get to OG, that's the biggest point on OG, is like those are the type of skills you need him to develop. Is like, yo, you're young, you got a lot of energy, you're an athlete, use those skills.
Yeah, I was going to say, the last thing we'll talk about with Gasol is, I honestly wouldn't even mind if he did a little bit of that Brook Lopez thing, where it was like, yo, I'm just going to, I'll shoot from anywhere. Like, I'll take the shot, no problem. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just be a little bit too aggressive. And I only want that in the sense that, like, first off, it's really against Mark's nature. It would be literally the opposite. But especially in the regular season, like, teams are just going to start jumping at you all game. And I feel like that could create an advantage for the rest of the team. So if we're expecting Mark to be a playmaker, if you just sort of establish, like, yo, I'll just shoot. And I can actually make a decent percentage. I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of that from Gasol. Let's talk about OG. So you and I both expect OG to be in the starting lineup. I think if you just look at it, you need a guy on the wing that you can trust to guard the best players in the game. I'm not saying OG can necessarily do that every single game. He's not on necessarily on that level yet. The consistency is not there, but the talent is definitely there. And if you look at the rest of the wing defenders, OG is the best of the bunch. And so he should start. And I think maybe expecting him to have a Pascal Siakam type of breakout is a little bit unrealistic, because I just don't know if he has the same type of skill set as Pascal does. But I mean, for me, if OG can have like a, honestly, if he can have like a Danny Green type of season where he scores like 10 points, he shoots 40% from three, you know, is solid finishing around the basket and defends really well and stays healthy for the whole year, like that is a huge win. To me personally, I mean, you know, for you, what kind of role do you see OG filling? Is it going to be more than a 3-and-D type of thing?
I think it's mostly going to be a 3-and-D. I think the big thing is like you want to. So Nick Nurse was consistently very high on him whenever he talked in any interview throughout the season. So early in the season, before stuff started going down for OG, and even like mid-season, he always was very high on him, and I believe that to not be complete BS. Because I think in our first season with OG, we saw like clear glimpses that when he got like a span of 10 to 15 games in a row, you could see he's like, oh, he's figuring stuff out. Like he knows, okay, he can make cuts here, he can do this here, he can do that here. Especially when he was with the starting lineup.
Yeah.
Last season, things just fell apart. I don't want to do it. The couple of good things that I'm going to take from last season is, even though his three-point percentage didn't show it, his three-point shooting stroke, like the new one that he came back with, it was a lot tighter, it was a lot faster, and it looked a lot cleaner. Like his arm wasn't flying as much to the right as it used to be,
mm-hmm.
which is a good development. I do think the biggest thing for him is, again, he's going to be in like a 3-and-D slasher, I think, where it's like, all right, you know, you're on the starting lineup. You put him back in the starting lineup. He has basically the same role he did the year before in his rookie year. Let's see if he can hit threes early on in the season and starts getting a little bit of respect there. Then that's good. And then I think the biggest thing is like his role in the second unit will be kind of just like, all right, let's see if you can run one pick and roll game.
Yeah. And that might just be a developmental thing. That might not necessarily be strategic for winning, but it just might just be, look, we're in a transition year. Let's see if OG has those kinds of chops. And I mean, maybe he doesn't, maybe he does. Based on what he did at Summer League last year, which I know is kind of a funny thing to talk about, but like he got a lot of usage as a pick and roll guy. I didn't really fully see it with him, but you know, if there's something there in terms of that, then yeah, I think probably with the second unit is the best way to explore that. But the only issue is like the second unit, like there's just so little shooting, you know, and it's hard enough to attack one on one, but if you got help defense in the paint all the time because Rondae Hollis Jefferson's in the corner being Michael Kidd Gilchrist, then like, you know, it's an issue.
Yeah, but I think at the minimum, he could become like an elite dunker spot guy.
Okay.
Like, if that could be a new, wrinkle in his game where it's like, he's just going to be a guy who's going to stand at three-point line, make a sharp cut to the dunker spot on, like, a pick and roll as the third guy, and just be that dunker spot guy where he catches and quick hop up. Because you know he has a quick jump.
Yeah. I mean, he consistently dunks with two hands. From a standing position.
Which is really confusing. I don't know why he gets it always dunks two-handed, but
yeah,
don't mind it.
He loves dunking reverse, too. Never seen a guy go reverse so often for no good reason, but he loves doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still high on OG, personally.
Same.
Because I think the biggest thing is when we see him at the three, and this is the biggest thing that we'll see, is a lot of you'll see when you look at highlights for OG in the season, especially defensive highlights, is when he's guarding on the wings or he's guarding up above the three-point line, because he's really big and he has really good hands at intercepting that cross pass.
He's always in pretty good position to away from the ball to poke the ball.
And again, in his first season, he was playing the three. Last year, we had him playing backup four. This year, we're going to have him playing three because we filled that backup four spot, at least with Rondae Hollis Jefferson. He should be able to fill those minutes. So you should be able to play OG a lot more at the three, which is going to allow him to be in those areas defensively rather than in like the friggin' post and in the mid post. I think that's the one thing that's going to benefit him, because it'll get him out in transition more and it'll put him in a better spot when the ball comes off the rim for him to get out in transition.
Yeah, for sure. I think OG's game is pretty straightforward, though. I don't think there's too much more to talk about with OG. With Norman Powell, shooting guard is going to be a little bit of a tricky situation. Might be fluid all season. Might see people come in and out. It wouldn't be a surprise to see Norman Powell sort of be inconsistent. But, look.
I think I just want to say we've grown a lot about Norman Powell.
What's that?
We've grown a lot about Norman Powell. Like, we do groan, as a fan base, a lot about Norman Powell. But, last season.
He was solid,
he might have been inconsistent, but he was solid. He shot the ball really well.
Yeah, 48% overall from the field, 40% from three. The three-point shot actually doesn't look that bad. Throughout the playoffs and stuff, I was able to just go and watch people shoot around and stuff. And as much as it's just shoot around, whatever, you can tell who's a good shooter, who's not a good shooter. It's not like Siakam is significantly better of a shooter than Norm. Norm's pretty good. He's pretty automatic.
And three-point percentage. You have to realize a lot of, he has a steady number of misses that are included that are just from, second unit, late shot clock, Norm, do something at the top of the key, right?
The grenade
people,
shot.
I don't know what he shoots above the break off the head, but, I know that's the most obvious miss that comes to my head when I think Norm Powell missing a three.
Mm, 5 seconds.
Dribbling top of the key, late shot.
That long crossover, the defender just stands in one place, and Norm's all right, I guess I got to pull up.
Yeah, and I think you can complain as a fan, but the end of the point, if a possession's gotten that point, that's just a bad offensive possession from the team, or it's a good defensive possession, and you have to kind of just chalk that up. Mm-hmm. And who do you want the ball at that point? You give it to your most dynamic guy. And by all means, Norm is generally one of the most dynamic players on the floor just because he's able to do stuff off the bounce.
Right.
Whether he's effective at making the shot or not, he can get a good look off. Like, he can get the shot off cleanly. So I don't worry too much about those misses, as long as, like, he's better at, in the flow of the offense, when you have run good offense, that he's making the right decisions then, which is usually the crux with him.
Yeah. Look, okay, this is the hopeful case for Norman Powell having a great year, or at least a breakout year of some sort, all right? Because you look at it, his overall career so far with the Raptors, you know, kind of inconsistent. He's had, obviously, incredible heroic moments, especially in the playoffs, but, you know, that sort of level has not necessarily carried over the regular season. But you look at it, first year, I mean, he's a rookie, he's a second rounder. The fact that he's even playing with the team after, you know, being in the G League and starting a couple of games, and also, you know, in the playoffs when he stole the ball off Paul George and stuff like that, like, that's amazing, right? And by all accounts, he had a pretty good rookie season. Second year, he's with the second unit. That was the year where the Raptors ran, like, iso ball, like, super heavy. I felt like 2017, the Raptors, it's just the ball movement wasn't quite there. And he was basically shutting in and out of the starting lineup because Damari used to get hurt all the time, and that he would start with Damari, he'd be good. I thought that was a good year for Norman Powell in 2016, 2017. 2017-18, he was, you know, he was battling OG for that starting three spot. He loses it. He goes to second unit. He has some minor injuries. He basically has OG's year from last year in terms of just he never gets a rhythm. He never really gets a consistent role, and he gets sort of lost in the shuffle. And then last year, I mean, like, he just had to, like, fight. There's a lot of games where Norman Powell would get, like, 5 minutes a game. And, like, CJ Miles, he had to beat him out. Of course, CJ Miles playing terribly. It was not necessarily too hard to overcome CJ, but CJ was ahead of him in the pecking order. DeLon was ahead of him in the pecking order. All those guys go. And I think throughout the year, you see steady improvement in terms of Norm Powell, in whatever role he was in, he was steady and he was consistent, which is something you just never saw from him. So if you can get consistency out of Norman Powell, and I think in the starting lineup, he's going to be empowered to take more types of shots. But I also think that, you know, him playing with the starters gives him more of a structure to play with. You got Kyle serving you the ball, and you got Gasol. And I think Gasol probably had the best chemistry with Norm in the sense that, you know, it's just a big guy who can screen for him, let him go downhill, and then space the floor. And that's exactly what Norm Powell needs. So I can see a scenario where Norm, under these circumstances, is actually a pretty, you know, solid starter. It would be a big jump for him to do it, but, like, it's not inconceivable. We're not talking, like, he's gotta grow a third arm or some shit, you know?
Yeah, like, Norm played 19 minutes a night last season, had, like, a 60% true shooting percentage, and, like, he had a assist rate. It was, like, his highest assist rate ever. It was, like, 11.6. So you show some improvement of being on ball. And the biggest thing with Norm is, like, his efficiencies rose, right?
Yep.
Like, last year, basically he only takes shots at the rim or from three. So last season, he basically completely took out any of those mid-range elbow jumpers. So now he takes 38% of his shots are within 3 feet, and then 43% of them are from three-point range. And the remaining 10% is, like, 3 to 10. He doesn't take any shots outside. So he has a good shot, like a shot distribution. And I think the biggest thing that he showed was, like, last season he showed he can really start finishing at the rim better. Like, last season was his best season finishing at the rim. He shot 62% of the rim. So, and he shot, and the big jump was he shot better from the 3 to 10 distance. So, like, 2 years ago when he had a good season, he shot 35% from 3 to 10 feet. The year before, where he had a poor season, he shot 42% from 3 to 10 feet. Last season, he shot 51% from 3 to 10 feet. So inside 10 feet, Norm Powell shot over 50% from the floor.
What do you think that's, like, a floater game?
Which is like 40% of shots.
What do you think that is?
So that's that little bit of floater game. He's getting that little bit of Euro where he can kind of make a move in the paint. And the big thing that kind of shows is, like, whenever I see that 3 to 10 percentage go up, it usually means either you've, like, developed your, like, in-between game a little bit, or you've gotten stronger as a wing where you can kind of take a bump and still follow through and finish, right?
That used to be a big problem for him.
So those are
because he used to get bumped off his shots so easily.
Those are positive things. Yeah. And he also shot 47% from the corner three.
Yeah, that was surprising. Which is, like, but again, like, yo, he can shoot, man. Like, he, I know it sounds crazy. Like, I just don't think of Norm as a consistent shooter, but like, he can shoot. He can make shots. He's confident, and he'll actually take the shot, which I think him actually willing to take shots with the starting lineup, with the team this season, like, that is important. I don't expect too much in terms of playmaking, in terms of just passing for others and things like that, but, you know, Norm, buddy. The faith is back. Remember when the Raptors had to re-sign Kyle Lowry, and it was DeMar DeRozan and Dwayne Casey in the 2017 NBA Finals, and they were joined by Norm Powell, and that was the recruiting pitch for Kyle to stay? I don't think they bring Norm Powell anywhere now.
The reason I can you can continually keep believing in Norm Powell is, like, he showed strides as a defender last season. Like, he's shown at least at the minimum that he's willing to get better, and he's willing to get a little smarter on the floor. Where, like, he still makes a lot of mistakes, but, like, it's been considerably less since the last two seasons, at least I feel.
Mm.
Then I feel like he's getting to the point where it's like, all right, like, we might be getting close to, like, the ceiling on Norm Powell, but the ceiling of Norm Powell might just be, like, a very good starter.
Yeah. And look, right? If he can just extend, like, his usage, then, yeah, no one, we would actually think of him as a very good starter. But he's...
Because realistically, you know, Norm, there is no reason for Norm Powell not to be able to develop into a Danny Green type. They have a lot of the same... They're about the same size. They both have plus wingspan. They both are bow-legged, which is, you know, just is what it is. But Norm, the type of shots Norm started taking last season, and one of the biggest things Norm said, he's like, he shadowed Danny Green a lot. Mm-hmm. Where he was like, he saw Danny Green, he's like, he saw the niche that Danny Green made for himself in the league. He's like, you know what, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason, like, that's, I think, the best case scenario for Danny Green, for Norm Powell, is that he gets to that, like, becomes a Danny Green level player across the board. And I personally believe he can do it. I think there's enough positives with Norm where you can believe in that.
Yeah.
And, like, you've seen him do it. The thing is, like, my biggest thing is, like, if you can see a guy, like, you see glimpses of him in the regular season, and then you can also see glimpses of him, those same glimpses in the playoffs, then you know that guy can do it.
Yeah.
So then it just becomes a consistency thing, and then you have to...
He had, like, clutch, like, 18, 19, 20-point games in the playoffs, man. Like, it takes a high skill level. It really does.
And I guess good teams, like, it's like he finds a matchup where he, like, biggest thing with Norm is he just needs to know what he needs to do against the defense.
Yeah.
And as soon as he figures out what the defense is and he knows what his reads are, he becomes comfortable. And then you see this player who just looks like, oh, my God, he's so freaking good.
Yeah. You know,
that's the biggest thing with any player, right? It's like,
it's almost comforting, man. It's not just like with all young players. I think it's like in any young profession, really. Like, you know, as a young guy, like, you don't really know what you're doing most times. And you're just not efficient with your time. And as time goes on, you know. You figure out what you're supposed to be doing. You get into a role, and all of a sudden you start becoming way more productive. So it's not even just basketball. I feel like it's like that with everyone else. If you look at the bench, couple of these guys. The thing with Fred is, like, I actually don't think there's too much to say about Fred, because I think he's kind of already at the ceiling. Maybe he can sort of extend himself as a starter. I can see him starting for a lot of teams just because they have bad point guards. But I don't see Fred necessarily as taking the leap to be... He's like a... Like a Darren Collison level type of starter. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he has another two kids or whatever, and he's like, you know, Steph Curry level. But, like, I think he's like a Darren Collison level type of starter where you're comfortable starting him, especially on a team with more options. But, you know, he's not necessarily like an all-star kind of caliber kind of guy. But I think really with Fred is just he needs to be steady. He needs to be better in terms of just playmaking with the second unit. And I think maybe having a more consistent rotation is going to help him, because I think last year it really did hurt that he was, you know, different players coming in and out didn't really suit his game. Also, he was dealing with injuries. So if you can have a healthier year and also just be a better playmaker, I think that's going to be a big jump, because I don't think he's going to take a huge jump into scoring or whatever. Like, he could take more shots and he could score more that way, but, you know, he kind of is what he is, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and with Fred, the biggest thing is the same with Kyle, but to a lesser extent, it's like, as long as Fred's shot's working, it opens up his entire game, because he's a small guy.
Yeah, exactly.
So if his shot's working, like, his entire game opens up, and then it's like, okay, this guy's really good. But when his shot's not working, that's where you start seeing the struggle, and that's where you see the limitations of his playmaking, really, because, like, he'll run a pick and roll, and he just misses the early bounce pass. And that's, I think, the biggest thing that he can learn is that early bounce pass, because Kyle Lowry is so freaking good. Like, if you just go, there has to be a highlight tape of just Kyle Lowry, Serge Ibaka pick and rolls, like pick and pops, like the short rolls.
Yeah. Yo, Kyle's passing that ball before Ibaka even moves off the screen.
Like, Kyle Lowry, as a passer, I think his, like, chest passes and, like, his lead passes are actually not that great. He's pretty off target a lot of the times on the lead passes where he overthrows guys. But his bounce passes are friggin' incredible because he's able to leverage being low to the ground, so he's able to get the ball to the floor faster than his defender.
Yeah.
Like, his feet are set and he can get the bounce pass off. And that's the one thing I think Fred can learn to better do is just setting up your feet. So that's the one thing I'd like to see an improvement out of Fred is like, yo, just if you can improve like that, like you can create better margins on your passing, then you'd be good. I do think like as long as his thumbs are healthy, he's a really good freaking shooter.
He is an amazing shooter, man. I'm telling you, he was like right behind Kawhi and Danny for most automatic in terms of just like in warm-ups and stuff like that. This man shoots well, yeah.
Because that's how he broke onto the starting lineup. Like after DeLon went down, like people kept trusting him. And I think for the first 3 weeks, he couldn't hit a shot. And then I was like, oh, yeah, this guy's a freaking automatic three-point shooter. And he just, like, because he's, like, he didn't get many corner three looks last season when he was running the second unit because it was always a jumble.
Yep.
But he's, like, an elite corner three shooter.
That's why he's in the two-point guard lineups. Like, he's basically a shooting guard in that situation. And he's much better in that role. And I think that's honestly why you can probably see a lot of Fred, like, he's not going to start, but he's going to finish a lot of games. I think that's almost a guarantee.
And honestly, with all these role player guys, I'm just hoping that championship confidence becomes a thing with them. And that's usually what happens to a lot of players. It's like once you get championship confidence, you just like it becomes really hard to shake you. Like where you can become J.R. Smith, where like, oh yeah, I've missed like for 10 straight games, but oh, I'm just going to douse this team for 77% 3-point shooting over 4 games and sweep them.
Yeah.
Too soon?
I mean, yeah, there's honestly an ongoing fight right now. I think people are just bored in the offseason. But there's a fight right now going on between Bucks fans and Raptor fans over Giannis, future Raptor Giannis. So, yeah. But it actually is funny. When you look back on the history of the Bucks, the Raptors really do own that franchise. I can't believe we were that worried about playing the Bucks in the playoffs. I mean, damn. We sunned that team. before the Raptors swept them this year, it was 3 straight. And that was with DeMar and Corey Joseph and what's his name? And Patrick Patterson.
Like in a Bucks Raptors series after Giannis, how many Bucks players are now better than Norm Powell?
I mean Norm Powell in a Bucks series is a different player, so
Buck Hunter, baby.
Buck Hunter. In terms of the rest of the reserves, okay, Serge, literally there's nothing to talk about with Serge. We know exactly what Serge is going to do. It's cool. If they trade him, whatever. If they don't, he'll make the team eat beef peanuts, but like he's going to be there. He's going to do his thing. There's nothing to talk about with Serge. The two newcomers then, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Stanley Johnson, what kind of roles do you envision for them? Because if you look at some tape of these guys, like, there are games where they are very, very dynamic, and then there are games where they kind of disappear. And so it kind of makes it hard to sort of nail down what types of roles these guys should play. So what you got for those two guys?
So Stanley, I think, is going to be like not last season Norm, but the season before Norm, where it's like either he's playing like 5 minutes or less in a game, or he's playing 18 minutes. That's it. Like it's okay. One of the two. He short leash, he gets in there for a quick burst, if anything. If he's doing stuff that's good, he keeps playing. If he's not, he gets out. That's basically the top of like Stanley Johnson that I see.
Wow.
Right? His biggest utility is going to be like if there's a big wing that you need that he can match up with really well, you put him out there to play defense and then just like hope he's making right decisions on offense, which isn't bad. Like I'll be honest, his off the dribble game, like it's a decent. Little bit better than OG, but
he definitely really could care. Dribble the ball better than OG.
Yeah.
He just can't finish the same way.
Not a big fan. Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, that's, I think, the top for him. We don't need to expect too much more than them. Like, if he's playing 10 minutes a game, that's probably fine. Because he's just going to be a marginal starter. At best, like, let's see if he can be a really good cutter around Gasol. Who knows? With Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, I think he's probably the guy who's going to play more minutes. Like, he'll be around 15 to 20, maybe.
Okay.
Depending on how much Pascal plays. I think Pascal, Serge, and Gasol are going to take up like most of those big guy minutes, and we're going to go small more often. But against most teams, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, like he could probably play 18 to 24 minutes.
Yep.
Maybe. That might be the high end. But with him, again, it's the same thing. He would be the defensive rebounder. I think he would be the guy you kind of plug in when you're like, okay, we're having a lot of trouble defensive rebounding. Plug him in. Let's see like if we can shore that up. and then you're hoping for transition. I feel like anytime you have a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson lineup, those are the lineups where you want Kyle or Fred really pushing the ball, and you get like cheap buckets, because then you know your defense is going to be good enough. And if you get like 3 to 4 cheap buckets in a 5 to 6 minute stretch, that means your offense was efficient enough and you're good to go, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of it. I don't actually believe in either of them are going to shoot that well.
No,
that no. feels kind of stupid to do.
I honestly,
like, it's not like
Rondae
where you've seen them shoot at a high clip. It's like, no, these guys, I've never seen them shoot at a high clip. And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, my Muslim brother, I love you, but that shot looks terrible. Like, even when it's going in, it looks bad. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, no, I agree, you know, man. I honestly, with Rondae, I think he just has a more defined role, right? So, like, it's a little easier to sort of put him in because he's consistent. He's going to give you energy. He plays above his size. His hustle is crazy. And he just kind of stumbles into scoring. Like, he's not necessarily a smooth scorer, but then you look at it, he's had a year where he's, you know, 2 years ago, he averaged like 14 points a game. And it's not like he was super skilled doing that. It was just like he worked so hard. His activity level was so high. He gets an offensive glass. It's almost like it's like a very diet Pascal kind of game. And so if he can do a little bit of that.
Like, he's a really good dunker spot guy. He's like, yeah, Ben exactly, Simmons perfect. Without like the elite playmaking. He's basically Ben Simmons, actually.
Oh, man. Yo, relax. Ben Simmons, yeah, making no. $170
million. Just to talk about Serge real quick. I 100% believe we're going to get like you know what Serge did to the Lakers? We're going to get that against like 15 of the 30 teams in the league.
Yo.
Because that's how bad they are.
Yo, come on, man.
Like, Serge,
come on,
dude,
man.
There are only so many teams that can stop, like, a Serge short roll. Like, he's literally elite at it. It's, so, like, you just put Serge out there with Kyle Lowry, you let him play with Kyle more. It's like, okay, easy bunny 15 points. You know what Serge is bringing you with Kyle Lowry if he's getting high minutes with him.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's the only issue,
Serge,
though. Because, like,
minutes,
how much is Serge actually going to play with Gasol or with Lowry? Because Gasol's probably going to start, you know?
I feel like,
or maybe
it,
you
I feel
move
like
one of those guys. Who knows?
Dependent. In the regular season, it's going to be a lot more matchup dependent, where they'll flip Gasol and Serge more.
Word.
I do personally believe that, because like, yo, they're going to play lineups where like Mark's clearly not going to be the quick start. Maybe they do like the Philly thing, where you play Mark the first 4-6 minutes, and then you swap him out for Serge, right?
Bro, no, come on, man. Even at 35 years old, Marc Gasol has more stamina than Joel Embiid, because that's the only reason they make that sub pattern.
No, but it's not as much a stamina thing,
as
much just like a utility thing, right?
Yeah, I guess.
And again, I think the one thing Mark said last season when he joined was one of the things that came out was like Mark realized, he accepted that he was like, okay, it's not my role anymore to play 35 minutes a game. Like, that level of minutes. And I forget who said that. I forget what report that was, but that was one of the things, like when Mark came, when they talked to Messiah, talked to Nick, they were like, he understood that. I think it was Nick Nurse in one of the interviews. I think it might've been the Woj interview or whatever, where he said, Mark kind of understood that, like, it's not his time to be a 30. Like, he was okay with not being the 34, 35 minute guy anymore.
Yeah.
Which is good. Cause when his legs get heavy.
Yo. Oof. Yeah. All right, so out of the rest of the guys, I think that's sort of your set 9-man rotation. There's a couple more guys that may or may not make an impact. We don't expect them to be in the rotation consistently, but out of these following names, Pat McCaw, Terrence Davis, Matt Thomas, and let's throw Chris Boucher in there just for fun. Out of those four guys, which of them do you feel like has the best shot of averaging the most minutes?
Because
there's a case to be made for each of them, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Early on, I'll say, okay, so the clear favorite is probably Pat McCaw, just because he's the most veteran of the guys.
Okay.
And has already played with the team, probably understands the sets better. But really, Pat McCaw's only there for, you know, it's a lucky charm. I personally, I'll be honest, I'm Terrence Davis Hive all the way.
Yeah.
100%.
Me too,
I really like his energy. I think his energy is going to come out a lot. And I feel like he's going to be the guy, like, he's going to be the guy where it's like when we were blowing out, like, the Hornets by 20, you have to play the entire fourth quarter, Terrence Davis is going to go out there and score, like, 10 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Against that team during a blowout.
That's the shit Fred used to do, man.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so, like, I feel like that's where it is. So I personally really like Terrence Davis just because he's long and I think he fits the size where Norm is. So, like, in theory, you need a backup shooting guard. Someone has to play backup shooting guard, right? So that might be the backup shooting guard, right?
Yeah.
Matt Thomas, I have no idea. I personally don't. Like, I saw, like, clips of him. I was trying to figure out, like, he's a really good shooter. Mm-hmm. I don't know if his speed is there. I want to see what he looks like in NBA speed.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of running around picks, I feel he's a little slow. So he might be more Capono-ish than J.J. Redick-ish. But,
yikes.
You know, we'll see what happens. Like, even, like, the Lakers summer league stuff I saw from a year or two ago. Again, like, you can get faster in a year or two, right?
But yo, that was a very lit summer league team.
I'm not.
I love that summer league team.
I'm just not totally sold on Matt Thomas, but he's going to shoot lights out when he's out there. Let's see what he does. You know, he could be a guy that you just throw out there for like a set or two and maybe he hits a three. He could be like a Jody Meeks. Who knows?
Like a Steve Novak? But yeah. That's the thing. It's weird to sign a Steve Novak type to a three-year deal. But, I mean, it's essentially like you're taking one as an undrafted rookie. I mean, he is an undrafted rookie. So,
and then,
you know?
Yeah. And then who's the other guy? Chris Boucher?
Chris Boucher.
No shot. Yeah. I'll be honest. I love Chris Boucher. He's not cracked the rotation, I don't believe. But, yo, he's going to be fun. He'll still hit those Boucher three.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There might be less opportunities for him to get those off, but, you know, there'll be games against the Wizards. He goes off for three threes in the fourth quarter. Why not?
I think Boucher is going to try to run up some guys during camp and really try to make the case. But, yeah, the path to him being a consistent NBA player is just it's just hard to sort of make out. But, I mean, he's so close. You know what I mean? Like, he really is, like...
Yeah, I think...
Like he's literally the G League MVP, with him you know? Is like,
he just feels a little slow. And he feels like he just doesn't have a strong enough dribble, or he's not strong enough. Because he's not big, right? He's not, like, 7 feet tall. I think he's, like, 6'10 with really long arms, right?
Yep.
And he has no frame. So he, like, he looks like the size of a small forward at times. Like, he's, like, that guy should probably play small forward, but he moves like a center power forward, right?
Yeah.
Which is tough. So if you, like, his is also a thing. It was, like, if he was more coordinated, then, yeah, maybe. But he's like a set shooter. I don't know too much about that. But
yeah,
I like Malcolm Miller personally, but Malcolm Miller, again, looks small a lot of the time. So it's unfortunate. But Malcolm Miller can shoot the ball.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. I mean, he can.
He's all right. He's got a pretty shot. That's all I know. I don't know about make percentage, but he has a really pretty shot. I like his shot.
I agree.
It's really nice. It's very smooth. It's very square.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree with you, man. Terrence Davis.
I'm going to say it on the pod right now. Raptors are going to be the 2 seed in the East.
Two? Okay, so ahead of who? Because Milwaukee's definitely one. They're a great regular season team.
I just think one of Milwaukee or Philadelphia is going to deal with injury issues that are going to screw them.
So Philly, then.
I think there's a case to be made Milwaukee could easily have a down year.
Okay.
I think... Like, just, like, after guys get contracts, it's just more likely to have a down year. Maybe, like, Brook Lopez, they take a lot of high-variant shots. And they got, like, very high-end of Brook Lopez last year. Maybe they get low-end of Brook Lopez for a stretch this year. They're still going to burn a bunch of games just because Giannis can win them games. But, again, Giannis only plays 34 minutes a game. So, like, yeah. I can totally see Milwaukee suffering. I can see George Hill having a, like, degrading back to what he used to be. Easily, like that's their point guard or their backup point guard. Like Eric Bledsoe, he's had a lot of knee issues in the past. We've seen him become ineffective at times. Let's see what happens with him. Like, is his shot really consistent enough to keep going? So Milwaukee, I think, clearly has issues where Brogdon used to really fill holes.
Okay. I would argue that their system is so, like, for the regular season wise, like, their system is so solid and everyone is so, like,
their system is proof
yeah,
that they can do it. But I just feel like there's a case to be made. Milwaukee, I think, is likely going to be the first seed.
I agree.
But I can see a case for them falling out where they, or maybe, or like a case where they kind of measure the regular season a bit more to try and play for later.
Yeah. Low-key, that team's a little bit old, too. Milwaukee's kind of old.
And Philly is the one team I don't really get the complete hype on. Because, like, people are like, well, Horford's there, so now you can load manage Embiid. I'm like, okay, you're going to load manage Embiid, but that means you are then, like, losing a talent piece. Their biggest advantage is, like, we can put out the biggest and most talented five, and then we don't have to worry about our bench. Well, if you're going to load manage one of those guys, then
you're creating problems all over.
You lose that advantage, A. Yeah. And B, it's like they don't have any shooters. They literally don't have any shooters. Like, their best shooter is basically Al Horford.
Tobias. Tobias can shoot.
Like, Tobias. They're relying heavily on Tobias Harris. Like, I hope they never need late game offense. I'm very honest with you.
Yeah, I was gonna say, who's gonna create a shot at the end of the game?
I'll be honest, their best late game option is Al Horford.
That little post up that
maybe
he does.
Josh Richardson.
No, come on. It's like not Josh Richardson, bro. It's Joel Embiid getting a post up.
No, it's Al Horford doing the JV move where you catch at the elbow, fake a handoff, and drive. That's their late game offense.
He used to cook Kevin Love with that in the playoffs and then lose to Kevin Love.
Because, like, who are the three-point shooters? They got Josh Richardson, who's not actually that good of a three-point shooter. You have James Ennis, who, again, hit or miss three-point shooter.
That's a rich like, man's poor brewer.
And then Mike Scott. Mike Scott is really good against the Raptors. There you go. You have Mike Scott.
Yeah, he's going to play
that's
like 26
team.
Games too.
That's their entire team. Like, bro, I don't get the hype behind it. They're going to have to play slow. Like, in the lineups, they have Horford and Embiid.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to have to play slow. It's going to be grind out basketball. And then, like, if their offense possessions slow down, like, you're really counting on Brett Brown to create a really tight offensive system for them. Because they need they don't have initiators.
Yeah.
They don't have anybody off the bounce outside of Tobias Harris. Like,
that's what I'm saying. They don't have guys who dribble the basketball, man. Like, who on that team dribbles?
And we've seen Horford and Embiid get hurt every single season.
Yeah. No, that team doesn't make
like,
any sense.
Like, what are we doing? Like, that team, like, last season they won 50 games. The season before they won 50 games. Like, they're, again, going to win, like, anywhere between 48 to 52 games. Mm. I don't see 60 wins on them.
I can see Boston overachieving a little bit, though. It might be, like Isaiah Thomas situation. Okay.
I want to see Boston find a guy over 6'7 that's not Enes Kanter or Taco Fall, who I both respect. Right, Muslim Brothers.
Yeah, for sure.
But, like, they don't have anyone over 6'7". Let's see what Gordon Hayward can do. I'm not that worried about Boston. Indiana, Oladipo's likely not going to be back for the beginning of the season. And even if he's back, it's going to take him at least 30 games to get back into, like, rhythm. Like, from pretty awful injury. Like, we saw Chris Middleton, I think, come back from something similar the season before.
Yeah, but Chris Middleton was never explosive, you know what I mean? Like, Oladipo needs to be explosive.
Like,
he needs to be quick with everything.
And Oladipo's a lot smaller than Middleton, right?
Yeah.
So, without Oladipo, they've lost Bogdanović and they lost Thad Young, who are two, like, guys who could create offense if you needed to.
That's true.
Thad Young to a lesser extent. So, now their best offensive creators are Brogdon, Jeremy Lamb, and, like, a pick and pop for Sabonis.
Oh, TJ Warren, baby.
Oh, TJ. Oh, yeah, TJ Warren.
Yo, TJ Warren is... People hyped up TJ Warren a little bit too much, man, because people were like, oh, man, I can't believe Phoenix traded a pick to get rid of him. That's true. Yeah, you shouldn't have given him a pick.
Good.
He's like,
really not good.
He's like 2012, 2013 DeMar DeRozan. You know what I mean? Like, when DeMar DeRozan was playing Rudy Gay, that's what TJ Warren is. Yeah, he is really selfish.
He's a black hole, man. Yeah. Like, anyways, TJ Warren aside, like, that team's not made to win a lot of games in 82 games. Just out the gate, because they're like it's gonna take them a while to figure like once everyone gets healthy. So I don't think they're gonna have like a great regular season record. Like it's not good. I think they're gonna be around 46 to 48 wins.
Mm.
And then you're looking at Brooklyn with Kyrie. Okay,
Brooklyn could go either way, but they're also short on Bigs a little bit.
They're probably maxing out at a 50. I think they're maxing out at a 50 win team. Again, I want to see who's gonna defend on that team now because they've lost a couple defenders.
DeAndre Jordan, baby.
Oh my god. Yeah, so let's see what DeAndre Jordan shows up. But yeah. Like, no, they're probably max out of the 50-win team. And then, like, who else are we talking about now? Like, we're
Orlando,
basically the East. But Jimmy Butler, Orlando.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, maybe Jimmy Butler Heat a little bit. I mean, I don't know. Jimmy Butler team's kind of like, top Orlando's out offense 50
last
wins.
Year, Orlando's offense last year was literally carried by Terrence Ross doing really, really well off screens in a contract year. Let's see. I love Terrence Ross, but let's see what he does not in a contract year. All right, let's see if Aaron Gordon can do anything.
Aaron Gordon's good, man. Don't slant Aaron Gordon. I like them in the playoffs.
He's solid.
He is solid. Yeah, he's a solid player. I want him to see him on a good team.
But again, like that team again looks like a 45-win team to me.
Yeah. I mean, the whole East is like a four.
I want to see Vucevic not in a contract year.
Yeah.
Because he's had two good seasons. Both were in contract years. They fell off a cliff.
I can't. I can't actually guarantee you that any team other than the Bucks are going to win more than 50 games in the East. Like on paper. You know what I mean? And that's why I think there is confidence
for
in the Raptors.
I do 100% guarantee over 50? The Raptors on paper are guaranteed over 50. If this team stays together,
okay.
Again, that's it. On paper right now, this team is greater than 50-win team. There's enough proven talent and enough continuity that team is easily going to win 50 games.
Yeah.
As an Eastern Conference team.
My concern with the Raptors, I mean, we kind of laid it out through the podcast, but there's the trade possibility, which is, you know, a factor you got to factor in, because I don't think you would let all these guys walk for nothing. It's just not great asset management, to be honest. There's that, and then also the team's a little bit old in terms of just who they need to rely on, and also a little bit too young in terms of who is consistently proven to be able to contribute. So from that perspective, I have them. I see, like, a best case scenario, I could see Raptors, like, maybe finishing two, like you say, but, like, you know. If I'm going to be realistic about it, it's probably like, you know, like 50 would be a really solid year for Raptors if they got 50 wins. But who knows, man? Kyle Lowry, the regular season with his track record is pretty damn good.
Contract year, Kyle Lowry, yo, get that money, baby. Kyle Lowry going to come back in ridiculous shape.
I really hope so. He's going to be playing in China and stuff. That's crazy, man.
He wants his last 2 year $40 million contract. He's coming, bro.
Oh my god. Honestly, he's probably still worth that.
No, 100%.
Just the charges alone. The charges is $5 million a year. The 100 three pointers is another $5 million.
Actually, that's the one thing I hope Kyle stops. Just stop taking charges this year. We need the charges. Someone else for the charges.
No one else takes charges like him, man. Fred.
Marc Gasol does. Use Marc Gasol for the charges. Marc, take charges. All right, use your $25 million for good. let's keep Kyle not taking charges. I'd like him to slow down.
All right, fair enough. All right, well, that's what you can look forward to next season. You know, throughout the summertime, in terms of what you can look out for there. So I'm going to be away on vacation, actually, for the next week and a bit. So this is why the podcast is coming out on Monday instead of the customary Tuesday spot. So the podcast will continue throughout the summer. It'll be a weekly show. We'll talk things like FIBA. We'll talk, honestly, it might be more expanded topics than just, you know, solely fixing on the Raptors, but... You know, just continue to look out for content. I mean, we're still going to be as much as we can in terms of even in the downtime, just, you know, pumping out the content here at Yahoo Sports Can, especially with the Raptors. So look out for that. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's we might have a couple of weeks where it's a little quiet, but, you know, we'll be back. We'll be back for sure. Asad, thanks for coming on the podcast. Follow him at Swar Lasers. Anything else to plug? RR tournament.
Oh yeah, yo! Reach the RR tournament and watch me give people buckets.
Yo, Asad really lives that life.
Give you buckets, man.
Not maybe one, two buckets at most.
Yo, if the Raptors need like a Boris Diaw type, I'm here.
Yo, I mean, when you
if
stood
Danny
up beside
Green's
Danny
6'6",
Green,
I'm 6'6", dog.
Yo, when you stood up beside Danny Green, and Danny Green got the hair and like the hat and stuff, like, you know. Dude,
Danny Green was surprisingly smaller than I thought he'd be. I was like, damn, I think I could post you up.
Relax, bro.
Dog, I think I have 45 pounds, 50 pounds on Danny Green. Let's see what happens.
That I don't doubt, but like the posting of Danny Green, I don't know, man. But yeah, Asad, I hope you enjoy your summer. I hope you enjoy some time off. Hopefully, and see your family and stuff like that. But it was good seeing you the other night, by the way. Shout out to Rec Room. Shout out Hoop Talks.
Great stuff.
Yeah. So you got a basketball, milk carton, things like that. So
shout out to Will Lou. Will Lou, celebrity. If you see him on the streets, ask for a picture.
Yo, what was that? What was that about? Why were you and Josh my publicist for the night?
Yo, you got to give the people what they want.
Damn. That is true. That's something I'm trying to learn to live with a little bit, to be honest.
Hey, y'all don't respect Will Lou, but people love Will Lou in the streets, okay? We took like
that shit is crazy.
Pictures for like 5 or 6 different people with Will Lou. They really love the guy.
I appreciate it, man. The love is incredible. I think, honestly, just going on YouTube and just like, hey, this is what I look like in real life, like, it's just increased the visibility of the whole thing. And I think that sort of expanded the magnitude.
People are like, people see on YouTube, damn, his head's massive. Yeah. Then they see it in person, like, oh crap, that must be him.
Yeah, Danny took that selfie on stage, and like my head was like 85% of the picture. You can't even see the crowd, man. So, no, seriously, it was a great time. Thanks to Hoop Talks for putting that event out there. Obviously, shouts to Harrison for bringing me on the show. And Danny was great. Phil was great. It sucks that they're going to LA, but it is what it is. And yeah, Asad, this is it, man. I'll talk to you sometime later on, and in terms of the podcast, it'll be back next Tuesday or Wednesday. I'm not sure, but it'll be back.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.